Interaction. Yes. The legend in Zeppelin. What did Ben Franklin do with the Hellfire Club? You know, LaRouche goes on about the Hellfire Clubs. They're the bad radicals, the Jacobins. Hellfire Clubs, I think, were an extension of the Jacobin societies.
Ooh.
That stirred up the French Revolution, led into head choppings and stuff. Anyways, that was good. Okay, so that's my introduction. Yes, I'm ready to discuss your concerns as a patient of mine. Why did you pass today?
Yes, the thing is, I think one of the main problems in our society is our concept of love. And I think it's something we haven't talked about in our Zappa series,
right,
that he was always against romantic love, because since we are babies, we start learning from the environment and from what we see and from the media, from the songs we listen to and the films and TV, how we should interact with the opposite sex. And it's all, I think, really wrong, the expectations we have, and I think for women it's even more damaging because we grow up with a lot of expectations that just cause a lot of frustration and deception.
abuse.
Yes.
Okay, that is what Zappa said. You're saying exactly what Zappa said. It's not that he didn't believe in romantic love. He didn't believe in the talk about it. He said, he had several interesting quotes that stayed with me. He said he doesn't think people should talk about love because it's a given among decent people. You don't need to keep reinforcing it. And I think of that more often today because I hear at least once a day walking around here, not in my house, but I'm walking along the tourist regions in front of the hotel, there's people on the phone, and they're always saying, you know, they have a short conversation, then they say, I love you, and the person on the other end says, I love you. I assume that's being said. They say it after every trivial little phone conversation. They must say it at least 5 times a day to somebody, to their child, to their husband or something. I think that's disgusting. People having to say, I love you, every fucking time they fucking interact. You know, pass the butter, I love you. Could I have some more steak? I love you. You know, this is ridiculous. Well, there's a huge insecurity going on, which is my thesis about the chip body and the reason people text all the time, especially the younger kids, they grow up in this, they text all the time to stay in touch because there's nothing to stay in touch with. The reality is so unreal for them that they must keep, on a tactile level, interacting to make it seem like there's somebody else in the world besides them. And so part of that insecurity makes people say, I love you, all the time. It seems to be from the parents to the kids or the kids to the parents. I don't think teenagers are saying it to each other like that repeatedly. So there's a big gap between the parents and the kids. The parents just feel so disconnected because they're not savvy with the texting, where they don't do it as much, so they can't, they don't have the time. So their insecurity comes out with this obsessive saying, I love you, I love you. I mean, what the fuck, man? You raised the kid, you showed your love to the kid, you abused him a little bit, but that's all part of the showing nice contrast, you know? You didn't do it wrong, no matter what you did as a parent. You didn't do it wrong because you at least fed them. That's love enough. What the fuck you want? Now, the next point is, on We're Only for the Money, Zappa says, do you ever, he's talking about the kids rebelling and protesting, and then they get shot by the police or the guards. He predicted Kent State, which happened 3 years later in 1970. He says in the lyric, do you ever tell your kid you appreciate their mind? Very good question. It's the root of everything. They don't compliment the kids on their ability to come up with interesting ideas. They don't compliment them. They might compliment
the kid if they obey.
Yeah, they compliment the kid if he obeys. But they never compliment the kid on... I'm not in touch with parents. Today, maybe parents do that today. If there are any parents left, I don't know if there's any parents left because you've got four bodies. Chemical body parents are pretty minor. Anyways, it's a great point. Instead of emphasizing the vague emotions of love and saying I love you, you should say to the kid, did you come up with a good theory today about anything? And the kid says, yeah, Mom. Yeah, I got one. I was listening to Bob Dobbs. This four-body fucking thing is great. I think we need to understand the four-body model. And the mother says, okay, gotta go to the shopping. I love you. Fuck that, says the kid. Dig my mind. Dig my mind, Mom. Now, you, knowing you personally, your background, you were never complimented for your fucking mind. They always thought you were autistic or something. They always thought that you were weird, right? Did anybody ever compliment you when you were very young about your intellectual talents?
Not really.
Yeah, they tolerated it as if you had a disease, you know, it's an aberration. But I think that you're saying, you said to me earlier that people, Roger, what is he,
Mr. Rogers'
neighborhood? Yeah, his neighborhood TV show. He said you need to pay attention to kids. Give them attention. He says not a love attention, but attention to what they're doing and take an interest in how they interpret what they're doing and what they say about it. That's another variation of what Zappa says. Pay attention to what they're thinking about. You don't have to agree with their thoughts or praise their thoughts or praise what they do, what they make. You just have to pay attention. Excuse me. As a matter of fact, LaRouche said, a key point in art, why do we have art? You know, Beethoven symphonies and that, is to practice paying attention. Paying attention to somebody is real love. There's no emotional qualities. You're attending to what they're saying or expressing, and you're ready to respond to it in some way. It's that kind of attention that kids need. So you would never read the newspaper in the old days, or be texting at the dinner table or the breakfast table. I don't even know if kids, they even have this kind of routine anymore, this middle class routine. But whenever you're with your kid, you don't do something else. You engage them and pay attention to their point, which is basically teaching them like people, teaching them as people. So you notice that most people really lack in paying attention to young people, no matter what they're doing. You noticed me when I was in Berlin. I immediately paid attention to whoever whack job walked into our midst, right? And I engaged them.
Yes, you talk to anybody.
And I pay attention to what they're saying. You were quite impressed with that. Because you didn't do that. You didn't interact with people in that way, or strangers anyways. So I think that's what Zappa was pointing out. That's what LaRouche was pointing out. That is real love, paying attention. And I guess in the bigger schools, it's hard for kids to have attention showered on them. I know teachers are trained to do it in some form, but the parents need to pick up the slack. The parents need to do the attending and when they're with the kids. And if they are got maids doing it instead of them, the kid falls in love with the maid. The maid is the real emotional support. Usually in those situations, the parents aren't around. So the love question is very simple. But nobody says this, what I'm saying, unless you're Frank Zappa or somebody. Nobody points this out, that it's attention, and that means stopping your chip body activity and fall back into your chemical body and engage it. And appreciate when a kid has thoughts, regardless of what it is. In general, it seems to me that parents try to be that way more. I understand they try to be friends to their kids, but that's more emotional. There's too much attention on the emotional, too much stress on it. Being a friend, if you're just a friend talking, just listening to their babble, and not encourage them to be articulate or to say what other ideas are on their minds, then it's no good just being a friend, just tossing the baseball or doing sports. There needs to be more action on verbal exchange and verbal expression. And Zappa said that. He said, forget this talk about love. Let's start acting together as if love is a given.
Yes, and because with these school shootings, there is all this talk that the games and the music are too violent and that they should be regulated. And Zappa said, no, there shouldn't be any censorship on any word.
There should be no censorship on art or expression or communication. But why are these kids playing video games and all that? Because their parents aren't paying any attention, any real attention to them. I mean, Zappa, that whole thing about bad lyrics, obscene lyrics on pop music, he said, first of all, they cut back on the educational budget, so they don't have music classes. But he said, if you want to improve the situation, you have these kids listen to instrumental music, classical jazz, just instrumental, don't have any words. And teach them that, but you got to raise the budget and pay attention to a music consumption class. You got to bring that back in. So
and that was also the ideas of Pythagoras. according to the music you listen, is your reaction. Like, you can be very violent or very
what he's saying.
Happy. Yes, like there was a case of somebody he healed that was like a pyromaniac. And he said, well, he just had to listen to other type of music.
Oh, he played the music.
Like yeah. Whatever he's listening is not the right music.
Once on a talk show, a woman called in and brought up a point to Frank, who'd been talking about the censorship for years, and made him think. He actually backed off on that point, and I can't remember what it was, but Zappa was capable of learning in the argument, and maybe it'll come to me at some point. This woman made a very interesting point about why censorship might be okay, with a whole different angle on it. And so he said, oh, I don't know what to say to that. That's an interesting idea. But back to He used to tell his children, they'd be watching TV and a commercial would come on, and he made sure that, you know, Dweezil, Moon Unit, and Amit and Diva, he would tell them that that guy is saying those words and he's being paid to do it. He told the kids that the information environment, a lot of what was around them on TV, was people saying things because they were paid to say it.
Yes.
I thought that.
Like,
that's a good thing to tell
the
kids.
Military complex and the industrial complex are behind the production in Hollywood films and TV.
Let's see, what else? In Frico, he had a couple ideas. He said, Zappa would sometimes put down pompous mind talk, pompous intellectuality. If you're paying attention to somebody and they're being pompous or hypocritical or fake, you pay attention, you bring up points that they'll stop being that way because you're actually paying attention. People who are pompous or fake or phony in their talking are that way because they're not used to people paying attention to them. So they make up shit.
Yes, and as a Zappa fan, we have to talk about this young Spanish guy. 2 days ago, he was condemned to 3 years in prison because he made a rap song. And the jury said he's insulting the royal Spanish family. But he's just using information he got from mainstream media. He got this from the news about the king going hunting elephants, or the daughter and the husband got into some corruption. They stole a lot of money. And they were pardoned. So this young guy, he sees this environment that is all corrupted and dysfunctional, and he's just trying to manage his anger or what he doesn't understand.
Okay,
he just makes a song and he has to go to prison.
Right. Okay, so if the news broadcast discussed the king, you have to remember, you told me this, that there's a law in Spain that you can't criticize Carlos, King Carlos or whatever.
The royal family. Yes, but these things were known by everybody. Like, he's not inventing anything.
See, those are expressed by the corporate news networks. That's not the private individual. And, you know, Spain, if you bring in McLuhan, it was not industrialized as fast as the rest of Europe. So it remained feudal, corporate, tribal, oral for longer. So they're just now becoming a literate population, or the last 50 years, say. So they're a bit behind on individual expression. So when this kid states his opinion, even though it's about public information, he is an individual doing it. And maybe the Spanish sensibility, they're not used to individual expression.
No, he was charged on terrorism and very serious things.
Yeah, but that's the authoritarian nature of the Spanish culture that the king, Franco, and then brought in. If somebody's going to change that, they're going to have to change the law. But this kid should have been told, if you express anti-views to the king and the royal family, you will go to jail, regardless of what you're saying. They should have told the kid.
This also shows what Ion is saying, that bloodline is bloodline. That the blood is still the blood.
Okay. Yeah, there's an elite there in Spain, but... that's not the issue here. The issue is
it's also an issue.
Right, but not in this case where this kid violates the law. If the Spanish people don't like the law, then they got to change it. They got to stop the king from imposing that rule that you can't criticize him. That's amazing to any other culture in the West that the king can even have that law. Right?
There is even a king.
What?
There is still a king Still already.
So the kid should have listened to Frank, should have realized that news was a corporate thing, not private expression, but if he had his private expression, he's breaking the law. So let's forget that. That's a bunch of stupidity all around on every level. So the kid's at fault, the king is at fault, the people are at fault, Spain is at fault just for still being here. How the hell do you be a country in this global membrane? You can't be a country anymore. And all these prime ministers and presidents running around claiming they're heads of countries and bureaucracies are nonsense. They're denying what's going on. They're denying the love that's been created by the global membrane. We're all one. We're all in one discarded, electrified space. It's the Christ of body. What is Dante's vision? The body of the Christ is now technologically happening.
Because that was also the idea of Marshall McLuhan.
Yes. Well, he said Dante's vision of the body of Christ among all men has happened technologically. He said that in the 60s. And it's really happened with the internet. The global membrane has imploded. So we are in a fused imitation of non-physical. Non-physical is the thing that is the substance that unites all humans, according to Ion. And so we've extended that non-physical into the physical. We have a completely imploded environment. And now we got all this older media, speech, books, movies, TVs, politicians, bulldozers, laser beams, all these technologies clutter up the fused condition. Fused.
Yes, but he noticed also that this fusion, instead of bringing love, is going to make people violent because of the loss of identity. Like, there is more violence among the sexes. There is more radical feminist, and there is this lack of balance in relationships.
He said a couple of things. He said in the 60s. When people heard the phrase global village, they thought of a pastoral, rural scene, especially in North America. And McLuhan says that the railroad evoked that pastoral image. The railroad went around primitive nature, turning the primitive nature into an art form. So the worship of nature that comes in with the Romantics is an effect of the railroad. But it doesn't mean that societies that existed in the agrarian pastoral landscape were passive and peaceful. They were more violent than industrial cities, said McLuhan. When you get everybody operating and living in one little space, everybody's nosy, everybody knows everything about everybody else, there's a lot of invasion of privacy, if there is even any privacy. And so people get annoyed and irritated with each other in the village. And they generally start butchering each other. Okay, it's almost like high school. Why are all these gangs happening in high schools? They've always been there in high school. The tribal, because the kids are in school every day with each other. The proximity makes them irritated with each other. It's almost like a high school is a global village. So McLuhan said much butchering will start happening, and that's what happened since the 60s. Endless butchering in Latin America, in Europe, Asia, everywhere, different kinds of ridiculous murdering. In your country, Mexico, is a real bad example of
that. Yes, 2017 was the most violent year. There were 47,000 killed people.
Wow. See, 47,000. Not by car.
Officially, but there are a lot of disappearances and who knows what.
Yeah. So McLuhan predicted the violence of our time. There's an excerpt of an interview he did on TV Ontario in Ontario, Canada, with a show called The Education of Mike McManus. You can look that up on YouTube, where Mike McManus starts off saying, well, I thought 20 years ago when you were talking about global village that we were going to come to some kind of unity, some kind of passivity. McLuhan said, no, exact opposite. I was warning people. In other words, he's saying, turn off television, turn off the global membrane as much as possible, because you're going to get a butchery if you keep it going. No matter what kind of content, you could have NPR, the most educated content on TV, day in and day out, and it wouldn't affect the imploding and the global village bugging each other aspect. So that's the naivety of the liberal and the conservative, the naivety of the literate, that think that their message, their literate message of some meaningful platitude, will get out there and calm everybody down. No, it's physiological. It's a natural process. It's part of your biology when you have television or
yes.
the internet.
Like today I watch a German ad from the 50s, and it said, women have two questions in their mind. What do I wear today and what do I cook today?
Oh, wow.
So that's what the women were supposed to think about and solve every day. And
well,
that's it.
That's 10,000 years ago. That's 10,000, the 50s is 10,000 years ago. That's Paleolithic humanity, because McLuhan said we live 200 years every 12 months in terms of new experience compared to cultures 100, 200 years ago. So by the 50s, that's 60 years ago, almost 70 years ago. That is so long ago. We are not human compared to that.
Yes, but a lot of advertisement, I was watching other ads from that time, were like educational. Like they will tell women, you should be sexy when your husband comes home, get ready and don't be like mad, relax. There is an ad, the woman is talking with another friend, and the husband asks, who is that? And the woman said, oh, she went with me to school. Oh, but you look much older. And so the wife is like, oh my God. and then the ad is like, yes, you need to drink this, because...
Yeah, but see, again, it's so long ago, it's a slower pace of life. There was time to be didactic.
No, yes, but even if they're not like so clear didactic, everything, like you always explain, is educating us, the environment.
Yes, yeah. That's the content education. The form itself was educating. And those ads at that time were for people who were completely different 10 years later. They were so different, they started rebelling in 1968 in New Mexico universities, to the point the government banned rock concerts for 15 or 20 years. In Mexico, the youth couldn't go to any bands in big stadiums.
Yeah, from 68 until the 80s.
Yeah, and that's one culture, very strict Catholic authoritarian culture, tending toward fascism.
Well, they were afraid of communism and socialism.
Yeah,
and so young people shouldn't be together in big demonstrations, any type.
Yeah,
you know, there were all these type of protest songs that they were promoting some communist ideas or ideals, and yeah, that was.
Well, that's the reason the kids went communist was because they hated those advertisements that they grew up with.
But I also think it has to do with media, just like the Nazis. Word national socialism.
Yeah. They were lovey-dovey.
And,
everybody get together.
A lot of discourses by Hitler that the people don't get to listen to them are against the banks.
What'd you say? Do that again? Who's against the banks?
Yeah, people don't really get to listen to what Hitler was saying.
Oh, yeah, right.
But lately there had been some people studying him, like Peter Jovanovic, because he said the main problems are caused by the printing press and the printing of fake money.
Right.
And to explain that, he did a book about Hitler and the printing press.
That's right.
Really.
That's good. That's useful, because people can disagree over every issue that involves emotions, but actually to talk scientifically or detached or unemotionally is to talk about the objects in your environment, not whether you like the objects or not whether you like radio or not, but what the medium, what the object, what the environment does to us. that is the most loving form of conversation, because you're not getting into arguments over personal emotions and preferences and jealousies. You're talking technically about the weather. Talking about the weather is probably the best form of conversation for people to love each other, to stay in love. But the weather gets expanded from terrestrial weather to media environments as weather. That's why McCombe called media hot or cold. Hot or cool is the weather terms. So discussing the weather is the way people should think and talk. Not whether you like something or not. That's irrelevant. And as soon as you start getting into liking things, other people don't like what you like, and then you get into arguments.
So, but the thing with health, that
health?
Yeah, what you're explaining, your six bodies.
Yeah.
It's very important to understand, because otherwise it's like people are still thinking, I need my other half, the yeah. other half of the orange, and we're like one orange, and you're another orange. But it's this falling state that we feel incomplete, and then we have these other bodies that make things more complicated. Like people have this Tinder app, yeah. they're hooking up, and I have a friend who had some problem because she was using this to chat with a man, but she said she saw that like a video game. She wasn't really thinking about leaving her husband. She was just flirting for fun, just like a distraction. But the husband find out and he wanted to get divorced. But this is the thing that we have to manage now, these other yeah. types of entertainment and interactions with yeah, the virtual relationships.
Yeah, if you go to a party, you don't mind your lover talking to other people, flirting, dancing, social interaction. But therefore, getting on the video should be just another version of a party. It's a party conversation. But people don't take it that way. It's actually people instinctively know that interacting on video is real. It's maybe even more emotional than chemical body interaction. So they get jealous. The spouses, the lovers get jealous of interaction on video. We have to realize that video is not a pseudo-event. It is biology. It is nature. So how do we coordinate all our different biologies now? Now, let's go back to... So Zappa, he said... he did say once in the 80s that the media is all there is. He didn't say whether the media was real or not, but he knew that they had taken over completely. And that was before the digital stuff. So he had musical operas he made with robots and cyborgs and that. So he was always bringing in the technological part of our nature into his discourse and his satire. Words are so tiny now compared to imagery. On Crossfire, they would ask, they would have to ask Frank, you mind your kids sending pictures of themselves naked to their fellow grade 6 classroom people? It would be interesting what he would think of imagery. He's saying words aren't a problem, but images, he'd probably be open-minded about that too. The thing is that imagery doesn't, or words don't affect anybody unless you bring in the past and past media. So you say today we have this identity crisis, we're all merged into a global unity, and there's nothing but leftover older media, which are fragmented, which are specialized, and people need them to make a living. So the making of a living is the recycling of old wealth. Not the new wealth is free. The actual environment of fused communication, fused, F-U-S-E-D, is something that can't put a price tag on. McLuhan used to say the electric environment can't be bought, sold, or stolen. You can't own the software communism of electric environment or the digital environment.
So, that's why the thing with the bitcoins that
they're trying to take the free electric environment and digital environment and move it back one step, one slight digital step back, and then have that be a currency to be something that you own. And that's probably not going to work, because there's too many ownerships of different media that are competing. So the violence in our life today is the battle over different technologies. Every technology is obsolete. Once you've built this digital membrane that we're all in, I guess that was done through fiber optic cables, satellites, and what other kind of technologies? Whatever they laid down to bring us all into that one spot, it costs money to make it, but now it's there, it's free. So we live in an amazingly fused paradise of access, and so we put up older media, older TV footage, older movie footage, older lectures, older letters, older articles, and we argue over all the past stuff and ignore the present and the implications for the economy right now. That's why university is obsolete. Kids engage old media in the same fused environment, F-U-S-E-D, fused environment, as everybody else is in. So there's not even any age level in the fused environment. In the chip body, nobody's any particular biological age. They're all fused. So probably the old literate Christians would think that is what the Antichrist is. The Antichrist is this fused technological environment that causes confusion and conflict in all the older media.
Yes, and I have a friend, and she asked me to give my pseudo-boyfriend Facebook to her, and I said, no, he doesn't do any type of social media, and she found that it's like really freaky.
Right, but that's antisocial.
Because it's like nowadays, when you meet somebody, you don't only want to talk to that person, you want to see their Facebook, their Instagram, their wherever, to meet that person. Like
to get to know the person.
Yeah, so it's actually the meeting of somebody is not anymore just the physical. It's all these other bodies.
That's right. And so if one is not doing the chip body, that's considered antisocial, suspicious. So your friend was suspicious of your friend who wouldn't do Facebook.
It's like everybody's like, why? There is something weird.
Yeah.
Like, no.
But there are a lot of people who refuse to go on Facebook because they think that they'll be contributing to surveillance of themselves, that they'll give up private
information. Yes, but at the same time, all this information that is being stored about each of us, there are also big concerns of how long this information is really going to survive, the digital.
Yeah.
Like, I've lost all my pictures because I had some problem with my computer, and then like 2 years of pictures were gone, and you have to back up in other formats, but then the formats are obsolete and this and that, and you have to always to move the information you want to store to the new format, and then they also don't last that much as maybe hieroglyphs.
it's a nuisance. I don't like that engagement of my time. Some people like moving things around and storing, but I don't find that a good spending of my time. So I keep my...
Your records.
Chip-bot.
Your
yeah,
other...
I keep
your
my
soul.
I keep my chip body to a minimum as much as possible. My chip body interaction. Because it's all so vulnerable. But I get other people like yourself making videos and storing them. You're doing all that work, the storing. I don't.
Well, we hope Ion is also storing.
What?
We hope Ion is storing them.
Yeah.
In their cloud.
Okay. So Zappa's arguing over words, and that those debates were in the mid-80s, before the digital world took over, before the chip body really became prominent. So they're quite ancient. Zappa arguing with a conservative or a fundamentalist Christian over whether words are bad. Now, what's interesting is Ion says that words are the most powerful part of your being, but they're not words with meanings. They're not words that society uses. They're not social mortar, is the term Ion uses. Social mortar is the cement that holds the stones together to make a wall. So each medium in history has been a mortar holding people together, you know, starting with speech, then writing, then the printing press, then the movies, television, radio. You go through the inventory of media or social mortar that held people together, but also caused conflict because the person's private citadel of consciousness could not be affected by media, but it would assert itself in a group dynamic. The fact that you are, you could say, a sovereign entity, is there in the midst of crowd and social mortar dynamics. And it confuses people because they'll feel threatened by media or by whatever is being discussed, and it causes conflict within the group mind, but also conflict with the other sovereign people. So when Yeats asks, how can you tell the dancer from the dance, that's the problem of social mortar interacting with your personal sovereignty, your personal citadel of consciousness. So that's always being argued, where you come in and where your social self comes in. Now the social self is made up of many bodies, many social mortars. So Zappa, on his liner notes for the first album, he admitted that a particular song was a body commercial for groupies. He said, this song is for girls to come and get intimate with my fellow band members. That was when the word groupie came in. And he says right in the liner notes, this is a commercial for us, for our bodies. So that's pretty obscene, according to those, back in those days. That's pretty pornographic.
But that's also really media ecological, that statement. Because it... I mean, for me, I will understand that not like for the physical body, but for our bodies.
Right, right. Yeah, for the electric body, you mean?
Yeah.
He was radical to say, because not many people said this unless they were some obscure philosopher, radical to say that love's a given and you don't need to talk about it. And the more you talk about love, the stupider you become. Therefore, all that teenage music in the 50s and 60s with the love lyrics and people's anxiety over who they wanted to connect with created unrealistic projections about what they were going to do once they got together. And it was all based on emotion and no sharing of individual talents, especially women. We're just expected to have a few talents, cooking and
dressing nice and cooking nice.
But see, those were simpler environments. They were just, they only had print media and the beginning of electric media. And that goes back to before printing press, people were not categorized according to sex or gender as much as they did once the printing press came in. Unisex could be considered the state of people in the medieval societies. And then you had different societies. Some were patriarchal, some weren't. The book The Alphabet and the Goddess by Leonard Schlein is a good history of what life was before the printing press. Patriarchy wasn't always there.
And that's why the sexual revolution happens after TV. Like you said, we have a TV body, and then the physical...
Not so important.
Yeah,
it's not the ground. where consciousness is policing itself and having its identity fixated with. So before television, the body was a key, the chemical body was a key factor of identity and values and morality, whatever the culture thought was moral. That gets displaced slightly once you get to the super angelic global theater with television and computers and later media, the chemical body is sidelined. And that's obvious. I don't see why anybody would disagree with me on that.
But somehow, like here in Germany, with the radio and the electric environment in the 20s, there was a lot of sexual freedom. So the medias have really a big effect in
when they
this interaction
in?
Between the sexes and what we call love, and that's why it is so important to understand what you're saying, because it's not anymore about thinking of us only as a physical individual, and I think Ion is trying to express that when he said love is a frequency.
Yeah.
And that's why we are so affected by all these different media. And now, like here in Berlin, it's not a big deal to go to a sex party and let yourself be filmed. or to send pictures naked to your boyfriend or videos or whatever. It's just like...
So when... Now, another thing Zappa said, he said that radio is new life. Very amazing McLuhan's statement. Radio is new life. So when kids heard music on radio, the frequencies of the music with the radio medium made them fall in love with the performers. And it was a confused love, but they were expressing the gratitude of a whole new feeling, of a whole new sense of life, a whole new bunch of frequencies that was coming through the popular culture, through the pop music. It was very powerful. That's why McLuhan said it was the highest decibels of human consciousness at that point.
Yes, it's like I talked with the mother of my ex-husband, and she said when she saw Hitler, it was amazing how the people in this mass will get so excited. Like she said, you could not control it. It was like a football game that somehow the amplified voice, they had mics before they didn't, caused something. And like all these groupies shouting in the concert, they will not listen to the music. They were just hysterical.
Yeah, so McLuhan would say, look how powerful these forces are, these new toys, radio and television. We don't recognize their powerful new frequencies, and we should control them more. That's how you might create morality or a more civilized society, is that you must not have these media just inflicted on whole populations of all ages and just let it run amok. And nobody thought of media that way, unless you were the Amish, where they went off and stayed in the country. And some religions, you know, don't allow you to go to dances and stuff like that back in the 20s and 30s. So, you know, McLuhan was helping people with their morality. He said, your moral issues are getting all confused. He says, first of all, if we keep having this electronic environment, you're not going to be able to have ethics in your daily business. Every politician will have a conflict of interest because you're engaging beyond your national boundaries with these environments and traded objects and commodities coming from all over the place inside a fused environment. See, people have to realize the most utopian fantasies of getting together were realized by the 60s technologically. The fusion. There's some people like to say that global village doesn't happen until the internet, that the global village did not really happen in television. Well, yes, the shipping was slower, the phone calls were slower, but still everybody could experience the television environment as crude as it was, and that's unity enough. Once you arrive at that point, you are fused. And the content may be far away and all that, but you're fused with the effect of the mesh of the medium, the form of it, and it's simultaneity. So later developments, like the internet, are just intensifications of a condition that started in the 50s and 60s.
It's just
homeopathy.
I was telling you, in the Renaissance, there is a lot of anatomical things hidden. Like, it's part of the Hermetic tradition to hide things that you have to find. But they, like in the Sistine Chapel, you have the brain, in Botticelli painting, you have also the lungs, or in the Garden of the Delights, you have an eye. That maybe they somehow knew that all these things, like the printing press, was, like McLuhan said, an extension of man, and that was a way of expressing the hidden changes that were affecting us
by not allowing them to show anatomy.
Yes, they're hidden, like the effects are not to be seen, like the electric environment dissolving the guff and
dissolving the guff
and things like that that we are not aware of until Lyon told us all these organs and all these parts of your body have much more functions, and they were somehow activated with all this process that he called the change reactions. That
all communication is media. Media is communication. That's why I say that ion is a new technology. It is the hidden environment, just like satellites were, television before that, radio. The frequencies of those environments were not fully understood. The frequency of ion as a technology is not understood. And ion is a technology because it communicates. And it communicates already in the environment of the non-physical known as the gut. Ion holds together people's essences, the part that survives death. So when it came forth to speak and create, that was the most radical extension of humanity. The most radical machine was the unified non-physical environment coming forth to engage in the contrast and the confusion of social mortar.
Yes, and it's really impressive that he said the goal of all this thing is to become a lover who loves.
Yeah.
So this is a new understanding of this thing we call love. And that Zappa was trying to express that it's not about the things you hear in these songs.
Right.
But it's something different that is it has to do with the frequency.
You can look at art. Well, maybe all media fall into the category of love. But art tries to show things in people's lives, the environment or the conflicts or the interaction, the psychology, the sociology. All the things that art does is an attempt to show the love in humanity. Not emotional love, but the environmental interaction of objects which love us, and we love them back.
The force field.
The force field.
I see that in the tarot picture of the world, that they are like coming out of a portal, the force field.
Yeah.
And also in the cathedrals, you have also these glass windows, the circular ones, like a big flower. Those are all representations of these force fields.
Right.
The rings. and that's the... Like,
well,
we have to achieve this frequency to go through that force field or that portal.
And when people fall in love, they fall through a portal. They fall into a frequency with somebody. And so the action of technology, which is to create a new frequency, is the action of love. But then social language, social rules come into that. and cause confusion. But apparently we like that confusion because that creates contrast, which then we have to be creative in getting around that contrast. So the noise that comes from social mortar is part of love also. That's why Ayan says there's no negative. No negative. Nothing's negative. Not even dying is negative. Not even dying is negative. Is that how you say it? Too many negatives. double negative. Dying is not negative. But we do have new information from Ayan, who's saying that dying is a problem now because the gap has emptied and you can't go to the regular death zone.
To take a break.
What?
You cannot take that break anymore.
Yeah, you can't take that break. That's right. That's complex. So Zappa was the coolest lover. Zappa was a lover who loved. He knew that love was a force field. He knew that the social rules about expression of love were erroneous and limited. Maybe he didn't have enough appreciation of the necessity of bad rules and bad contrast as stupid people. He didn't understand that we need stupid people to create contrast, so you can be creative with it. But then I sometimes think he did. But when you use words, you're going to get put into an angle, an abstract position, a point of view.
Yes, and at the end, I suppose ascended ones, like enlightened ones, like hermits or saints, they are all single because they don't need to look for some validation, or it's like you can be happy on your own and you don't need to engage into these weird things, relationships and dependencies.
Right. Yeah, that's I think the future test on the saints who are ascended and alone is they're going to be forced to relate to people because everybody else is ascended. And then what happens then when ascended people can engage in social mortar without the validation issues that were there before? I rest you. I leave you with that question.
You tell us how it is.
I live that way. I know it's like,
you go eat some ice cream, you go to the beach.
Ice cream and beach. And whoever I meet on the way.
Some popcorn.
What?
Some popcorn.
Popcorn. But whoever I meet along the way is my lover.
You just ride, the wave.
Right. You hear what I just said?
Doesn't matter the size. You just go.
Whoever I meet along the way to the beach, whoever I meet along the way is my lover for the day.
Okay.
And it doesn't mean that you have to engage the chemical body. It's basically, to come back to my point, is I'll pay attention to the person that enters my reality. Paying attention is how you love. And I look at everybody I walk around the pathway. I make an effort to make eye contact. And most of them don't make eye contact. They're not paying attention to who's coming into their space. They're not lovers. They've got some crazy purpose to go.
They're looking at their cell phones.
Yeah. And I'm offering myself up every day to engage attention. I'm a lover who loves.
Okay.
I've got to be creative. I've got to invent something. Here we go. I see that Howard Gossage, the ad man who first promoted McLuhan with many magazine articles, he writes on page 14 of McLuhan Hot and Cool, the four phases of an environment. So when a new technology shows up, a new extension of humans,
Everybody's impressed. Wow, look at this. This is the best mouse trap ever. It's a really good mouse trap. And it's the mouse trap is having other kinds of effects that people don't know. So it is the last word phase. It's very impressive. It's new. But there are rhetorical or persuasive effects happening that people don't know. So I have your last word, phase one of the tetrad, you know, enhancement, equals rhetorical or immediately persuasive action of the new effects. So after a while, the technology becomes used by everybody and they get used to it. So you move into the dialectical phase of the trivium. You move out of the rhetorical last word and you move into the cliche. That means it's almost boring and people aren't excited about it anymore. So that's when people start to say, you know, we've had TV, we've had President Trump, he's a president, I'm bored with Trump, we got to get a new president. So they start to resist what the rhetorical effect had been. They try to adjust it. It's partly ions 3-2 wanting it, and wanting it is you change it to make it the way you like it. So there's a dialectical resistance, an action of resistance to the new effects in the second phase, and it could even be a Hegelian three-part thesis, antithesis, synthesis situation. Then you move to phase three. Now, the cliché, the new technology, having become cliché, has been around for a while. Now someone comes along and says, we could use this for a completely different purpose. So they take the environment and they use it differently. You know, artists always take the old clichés from the museum and they repaint the old paintings with new ideas. So within the art craft, that's an example of turning something into an art form. Now, part of that enterprise is grammar, which is searching for origins of meanings, of words, of gestures. So when one starts to look at this boring old technology, you start to say, what's this like? You start to think about where to come from, and you start searching its form. And in that quest, you come up with the seeds that started the form. So we call that the grammatical action of the effects has been metonymy. Metonymy means if I have a bunch of people making videos, Buzz Kosten, somebody else, and you, I'll say, see those videos? That's a Roxy. It has a certain style. So metonymy is when you substitute a word for an object, one metaphor word for another. So artists take what's given and they change it. They put the object in a new ground. And that's the action of metonymy. All right? So I expect a Roxy video from you, not a Buzz Kosten video. Right? That word, Buzz Kosten, refers to the action of the metonymy. So that's what that means. That's the art that's the art form status. So people, they make their millions selling their art, and they're quite excited about having arrived so that they can be put in museums. But there's another phase. When the people know about the art, they don't go to the museums, they don't know anything about the Andy Warhol, but they know the soup can. They've seen the soup can somewhere, and they might even know it's Warhol. That's when the environment has become archetypal. Everybody can see something in it. Everybody can think it's part of their cultural legacy. So it is quite universal, quite comprehensive what it contains. So I have here the four parts of the quadrivium, music, geometry, astronomy, and arithmetic. And they make up the universal action of an archetype. You can do a musical version of it, a geometry version, astronomy, or arithmetic version. Musical, geometrical, astronomical, and arithmetical. You can even make a tetrad out of the four phases. So all this stuff, the last word phase, the cliche phase, and the art form phase, all happens simultaneous in the archetypal phase. So when McLuhan says a tetrad, its four phases are all happening at the same time. He's talking what I'll call archetypal. Now, the other aspect of this is that you get the first three phases of the... Okay, you want to say something?
Just the four phases that is in your bottle. Like,
yes.
We see three and one is behind.
Very good. And the one behind is what it flips into. It's the opposite. Probably doesn't even look like a face.
Yes, and I think it's like you're the only one who can get all these different expansions of the meaning of these archetypes.
Yes. So I take the trivium, the last word is rhetoric, cliche is dialectic, and art form is grammar, and you push that process to extreme, it flips into its opposite. And the opposite of the trivium is the quadrivium. It flips into music, geometry, arithmetic, and astronomy. So that whole action is different from the last word purpose, the cliche purpose, and the art form purpose. So I've made a tetrad out of the trivium flipping into the quadrivium. And it also shows these four phases, the last word, the cliche, the art form, the archetype. And it's a nice little pattern. I don't think it'll stop the dead children trade in Mexico. I don't think this will offer enough insight so that they'll arrest the people selling body parts in South America, Africa, and Canada. So we're stuck here with an abstract pattern that I evoked while sitting around pondering the old McLuhan meme. Right? That's what I did. I made up some stuff.
Yes, they're not just giving quotes.
Right. I can do that.
Yes, I know, but you have extracted the juice.
I make new patterns. So when one says McLuhan is reported to have said that art is anything you can get away with, I don't think McLuhan said that, because if he's going to talk about art, he's going to talk about these four phases: last word, cliche, art form, and archetype. He's going to break it down into more subtle shifts, not just some vague statement, art is anything you can get away with. No, art is the third phase after the last word and the cliche action. And it flips into archetype. So at the top I have said the four phases an environment goes through have the qualities of the postures of the trivium and the quadrivium. So I think, unless you have some questions, I don't know if anything more to say. I've explained it.
Well, I find it so fascinating that the archetype of this character with the different faces.
Yeah.
It's not only like a decoration, but it really evokes so much. It's not just
a it's the fourfold. The fourness is so important in many cultures. The four directions, the four winds.
Yes, in Toltec culture, they thought you have to repeat a ritual four times for the thing to manifest.
Wow. And McLuhan, he said we only had four senses. Not five senses, we had four senses. Eye, ear, nose and mouth are one. Smell and taste go together as one. And then movement, kinetic.
And I think it actually should be only one synesthesia thing. Like,
that's tactility. That's the interplay of the senses. That's the synesthesia of tactility. That would be the one form. But it's not a form. It's a process. It's an action of integrating all the different parts to make something coherent. Which is what your mind does all the time. Your mind's always taking data and putting it in order.
Yes, this idea that we see, we smell, and we do everything at the same time. So we cannot...
And then you bring in the non-physical. That's part of the process too, not just your four or five senses. Your non-physical is communicating and organizing and relating it to other things, probably to other timings, to the so-called past, present, and future.
Yes.
Yes, I think.
Yeah. Please turn to one side and then to the other side.
Okay.
Right.
And then the third, and it'll look great at you. And then
that's
and the fourth one is over here. Can you see it? The fourth side.
The darkness?
Saw the forest of my shirt. The jungle of my shirt. That's the fourth piece. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much for recording.